we're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Up first, on this week's show, I'll speak with the tabla player, Zakir Hussain, an icon of Indian classical music. He'll be performing at the Palladium with Bela Fleck on Thursday, November 2nd. And on the second half of the program, I'll talk with Judith Thomas, Deputy Mayor of Neighborhood Engagement for the City of Indianapolis. Deputy Mayor Thomas is a lifelong fan of jazz music and a passionate advocate for the arts in Indianapolis. Thomas will share some of her favorite Indianapolis jazz recordings and will discuss the role of music and art in her work for the City of Indianapolis. The tabla is a small hand drum, best known for its use in North Indian classical music. Zakir Hussain is widely acknowledged as one of the greatest living masters of the tabla. He learned the instrument as a child from his father, Ala Raka, best known for his long association with sitar player Ravi Shankar. Zakir Hussain has worked with the most revered names in South Asian classical music, from Ali Akbar Khan to Yu Srinivas. Zakir has also been a relentless innovator, collaborating with pop music stars like George Harrison and Tina Turner, infusing the tabla with electronic music, psychedelic rock, jazz, and many other styles. This year, Zakir celebrated his 50th anniversary collaborating with jazz guitarist John McLaughlin as part of the group Shakti. This year also found Zakir continuing his ongoing collaboration with banjo player Bela Fleck. I discussed all of this and more during a recent talk with Zakir Hussain. Let's join our conversation. Zakir, thank you so much for taking time to speak to our listeners today.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, my pleasure. And congratulations on all the amazing work you've been doing over the last few years. I know you were recently awarded with the Kyoto Prize in Music. And this is a very,
yes, sir,
very prestigious
award. It's a big
award.
Honor. It's very prestigious. And I guess behind the Nobel, it's the highest in terms of award given in the music field. So I'm deeply indebted to the panel that decided to bestow this blessing on me. And so
I wanted to mention the past musicians who've received this award, just a few: Pierre Boulez, Messiaen, John Cage, Zanakis, Cecil Taylor. How does it feel to be in that group of
musicians. To stand in that in that line of musicians? I mean, I don't know what I did to be in there, but I certainly will do my best to be able to be deserving of it.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
We're going to discuss your upcoming concert with Bela Fleck, but first I wanted to ask about a major milestone in your life this year. 2023 marks the 50th anniversary of Shakti, a legendary group you co-founded with guitarist John McLaughlin in 1973. You celebrated Shakti's anniversary with a new album and a tour. Any reflections you'd like to share on Shakti's 50th anniversary?
It is amazing to be working with John these many decades down the road and still have the same kind of energy and excitement and fire in our interaction. And, you know, the love is there, you know, when we are playing music, and the respect for each other's ability to be able to pull it together as and when called upon. And so this is, you know, very special. I mean, watching and experiencing us playing music this time around on the tour, harking back down 50 years, back 50 years, it appeared to be the same. The energy was just as, buzzing. It's good to be able to celebrate 50 years, not only thinking about what we were, or where we are and where we are going. And that makes us, still alive and well and kicking. And so thank God for that.
And Zakir, I spoke with you a few years ago, and we discussed your work with tabla beat science and the relationship between Indian classical music and electronic music. Mm-hmm. And now here in 2023, we're entering a new dimension of music, which is the world of AI, artificial intelligence. There are many musicians and engineers developing AI tools for use in Hindustani and Carnatic music. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the role AI might have in the future of Indian classical music.
I guess the first hurdle to cross is to be able to get to know the technology. And once you get to know the technology, then it is possible for you to be able to, delve into it, go deep into that world. I do feel that if I'm going to get involved in AI, that that I better know the process, that I better know what that technology is, so that I may be able to, converse on that table with that spirit, whatever that spirit is, in its language, and feel comfortable building a conversation.
As you know, the great vocalist and performer Tina Turner passed away earlier this year.
Yes.
A revered icon of American music and culture. I read an article from 2004 that said Tina Turner studied music with you in preparation for a Merchant Ivory film called The Goddess. I don't think the film was ever made, but is that true? Did Tina Turner study music with you?
Well, I wouldn't call it study. Who can teach a goddess like that and an incredible performer what to do with music? She was already so out there. I mean, if anything, I would be studying with her. Mm. But I was basically a coach, a producer, a composer of this project for Merchant Ivory Film, where she was going to play the goddess based on a book called Transposed Heads. But it never came to pass because after finalizing all the songs and everything and even recording some basic tracks and stuff and me meeting her and arranging for an Indian vocal coach for her, the director, Ismail Merchant, passed away. And that kind of effectively halted the project because there was no one else who was able to take it on and do it the way it needed to be done. So unfortunately for me, it did not come to fruition. Getting to know her was a very special, experience for both of us. A human being par excellence, a lady of incredible gentleness and love and affection, and having gone through so much pain and suffering in her life, all she wanted to do was share love and affection with everybody else, and to have that come to you in limitless was just a fantastic time.
Did you say there were maybe some fragments of recordings you made with her that exist?
Yeah.
Wow.
I did.
Wow.
Yeah, which I guess won't see the light of day, but it's just a personal treasure.
Wow.
That I have and hold dear every now and then to listen to and just smile in her presence.
Zakir, you'll be performing here in Central Indiana on November 2nd with an amazing group, including the banjo virtuoso Bela Fleck, the bansuri player Rakesh Sharasia, and the double bassist Edgar Meyer. You also have a new album with this group, and you've had a long artistic partnership with Bela Fleck. Why has this been such an enduring collaboration?
It is actually, in a way, a continuation of my life as a Shakti member. Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer, since their young age, I'm much older than them, were fans of our group Shakti. And they would listen to that music and they would discuss it, dissect it, and, you know, try to learn something about the way John and I made music. And that made them so curious and so eager to want to sort me out and see if they could get me to work with them. And that's how it all started. And we all come from different backgrounds. We all come from speaking in our own languages of music, but then we get on the stage and we play together. And suddenly it's like we have installed on our tongues a translator that instantly translates into each other's languages, and we are able to understand each other, speak with each other, and be able to come out at the other end with a unified statement that speaks to the audience with us as one thought, one mind, one process. It was true of Shakti, and it is true of this band.
Quick follow-up question about Bela Fleck. I'm curious about the musical compatibility between the tabla and the banjo. Is there a natural compatibility between the banjo and Indian music? Does it fit into that world easily?
Well, see, what you're doing is you're putting it onto the instruments. It's the humans. It's the people. It's the mindset. It doesn't matter. I mean, a banjo could be a sitar. A banjo could be a sarod. That's not the issue. I mean, as long as Bela sees in his mind and in his heart the ability to be able to make his banjo speak like a sitar, or for me to be able to take my tabla and speak like a washboard or a fiddle. It's in the head over here. So yes, there are elements that meet and make us wonder, are we from the same seed? Like banjo, I came from West Africa, and the gypsies went down there from India and thrived at the time of the Moors who came to Spain and brought the gypsies with them, and the music emerged, and that's why you find flamenco to be so close to Indian music. You know, it's hard to tell where one meets and the other begins. I think there's a seamless injecting of these abilities and these traditions. For some reason, we as musicians sometimes approach interaction with the veil of who I am and who you are, as opposed to no veil and saying, who are we together?
this is a very tense and difficult time in the world with tragic conflicts in Ukraine and the Middle East. Mm. In 2012, you and Shakti played a concert in Ramallah in Palestine.
Yes.
I'm curious, how do you see the role of music during times like this? And can music play a role in fostering peace in times of injustice and violence?
Of time and time again, over the course of history, artists have shown to the world how to coexist, how to live with each other, and how to interact and imbibe and emulate each other without any egos, without any borders, without any fences, with the ability to understand each other, to allow each other the space needed, because of our ability to be able to embrace with no questions asked and no, what should I call, conditions. Now, if that kind of process be applied to our daily life and our politics or whatever that divides us as people of different countries or different cloths, I don't see why we cannot live together in peace. I mean, it's up to the powers that be to be able to learn from this interaction and apply the template to what's out there that runs our world.
Our listeners can learn more about your work and purchase tickets for your upcoming concert on November 2nd at ZakirHussain.com. Zakir, I'm a fan of many, many years. Thank you for your music and your words. It means a lot to me that you did this today. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. We just heard an excerpt from my recent conversation with the tabla player and composer Zakir Hussain. You can hear my full talk with Zakir on the Cultural Manifesto podcast. Cultural Manifesto will return after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. For the remainder of this week's show, I'll speak with Judith Thomas, Deputy Mayor of Neighborhood Engagement for the City of Indianapolis. Deputy Mayor Thomas is a lifelong jazz fan and a passionate advocate for the arts in Indianapolis. I recently invited Thomas to the WFYI studios to share some of her favorite Naptown jazz recordings. Let's join our conversation. You are a strong advocate for arts and culture here in Indianapolis. You have a great love and knowledge of Indianapolis jazz. We're going to talk about all of that today. So thank you, Deputy Mayor Thomas, for being here.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. Can't wait.
I believe you were appointed Deputy Mayor of Neighborhood Engagement for the City of Indianapolis in 2021. Tell me if that's correct, and give us a quick overview of what you do.
Yes, that is correct. 2021, I received a call in December of 2020 asking to come and talk to the mayor. I, of course, thought it was a joke, but it was not. So I think I went in on a Thursday and said yes on a Monday. It was an opportunity I could not pass up. In my role, I work very closely with our mayor's neighborhood advocates. There are 10 of them all across the city that engage with various neighborhoods and leaders to bring back to the city what the issues, concerns are, and then also to provide resources to the community as well in the different neighborhoods. The Mayor's Action Center work closely with that group, that department as well. You know, it's the front line. It's making sure they have the right information and be able to communicate that. And we're always trying to fine tune that and sharpen that. Also work closely with the Parks Department. And as you know, there's major investments in our parks right now, which is very exciting. Looking at Frederick Douglass Park. It's going to be beautiful. Great history there, too. But we could have just a show on Frederick Douglass Park, to be honest with you, as well as other parks that are getting developed. Of course, the greenways, the trails. So working with that department, the Office of Minority and Women Business Development, recruiting, but really encouraging companies, businesses, small businesses, from veterans to disabled to minority and women businesses to get certified through the city so that they can be looked at for various projects that the city is producing. So that's very important. We've got to help grow small businesses here in this city. And I also work with the International Latino Affairs. Very exciting department because we have Sister Cities program. We have the Mayor's Latino Advisory Council. We also support a lot of festivals and just celebrating the uniqueness of Indianapolis and the international side of it, but also concerns and issues in those communities where we need to help and do some outreach and make sure people have what they need and know how to access. Also work with Veteran Services. We have a Veteran Service Office where Veteran Service Officers will actually sit down with veterans and talk to them about their benefits that they may be leaving on the table that they don't even realize they're doing that. Also work closely with Ben Tapper, who is the new Diversity Inclusion Officer with our Diversity and Belonging. I think we call it Inclusive and Belonging Department. And the Arts Council. I work with the Arts Council as well when it comes to their needs and connecting them with the city and services and what have you. So really, I've got a lot that I work with. I also work with other departments in different ways as well, where they need me, when they need me, and how they need me. I'm there for everybody.
Just listening to you describe this is overwhelming.
It is something. I swear I'm missing a department.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I just step up when I need to step up. I mean, I've got a small window of time, right? Obviously, we're hoping that we can see another 4 years. But even then, that's a for placing some of the programs and concepts and ideas that we have, that we've developed as a team, especially through the American Rescue Plan funding, and seeing those through is crucial. And it's really all about listening to people, what they need, and where we need to put that support and financial support.
With all these responsibilities, how much are arts and culture part of your day-to-day work?
You know, it's funny because I think about it every day. I talk with the Arts Council a great deal, especially when it comes to budget season. We talk a lot there. But really, even the beauty of Indianapolis and how now, well, we've always had great artists come out of Indianapolis, right? We know that. And Indiana. But now we've got all these independent creatives that are coming up with their own ideas and their own concepts. And how can we as a city support them? How can we encourage corporations to support them, to see this as a viable way for people to make money and support their families, but also do what they love that also adds to others and their lives? I mean, I have dreams of what could be done in this city. It only takes money because we already have the artists, right? So that's to give you an idea. And even with some of the developments that we have, we've got so many new developments coming up. What does that look like for our artist communities from a, you know, music standpoint, visual arts, performing arts, spoken word? You know, we've got so much that's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 years. How do they fit in? And that's actually really part of my job, almost something that someone, let's put it this way, the chief of staff said, hey, you know, you're the arts person. Start thinking about this stuff. So working with Department of Metropolitan Development, working with the Parks Department, and it really is a part of a lot of areas in the city, even the Office of Public Health and Safety, right? How do we implement arts into mental health and into encouraging people to come out of challenging situations? So, yeah, every day.
Before we get into music, I want to talk briefly about your background. Mm-hmm. You grew up in Gary. You spent your early years there.
Yes.
I believe you came to Indianapolis as a teenager.
Yeah, I was around 11 or so. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it strikes me that you embody many important characteristics of your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother, Mildred Ball,
yes,
was the first woman to be inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yes.
She was a longtime administrator for the Indiana High School Athletic Association. your father, Lionel Ball, mm-hmm. was a police officer in Gary.
Yes.
And from what I understand, a lifelong jazz fan
lifelong.
Who instilled a love of jazz in you.
Mm-hmm.
The comparisons go further. You recently served as the president of the famous Madam Walker Legacy Center on
yes.
Indiana Avenue. Both of your parents were very active there. Your
yes,
mom was on
were.
The board and
yep.
your dad, I think, did security for the
yes,
building.
Yes, he ran security
yeah.
there.
Mm-hmm. How did your upbringing and your family shape who you are today and what you do today?
Boy, I was so blessed to have the family and the parents that I have. Really, and yes, my dad was a police officer. I think I would have to say my dad was one of those early metrosexuals, right? But I think all the men of his generation, black men of his generation, because they saw people like Duke Ellington as clean as Duke was when it comes to when you see him, you're like, well, that is class right there. You know, Miles Davis and the trends that he set, not only in music, but how he looked, how he dressed. When those jazz artists came up there in the early days, they looked good, right? I mean, they represented so much for so many people. And for a young man like my father to see somebody like a Billy Eckstein at the Regal Theater, right? Or to see Duke Ellington's band or Count Basie's band come, or the MJQ, Modern Jazz Quartet, was just a big part of his life. And he played those albums all the time. You know, we listened to Daddy-O. I think it was WBZZ. It was a public station in Chicago. And one of the first times I remember a song, I remember remembering a song and knowing the words, was going over the bridge from Gary into Chicago, because my dad and I hung out in Chicago a lot because he also liked to shop and eat good food. And Billie Holiday's God Bless the Child. And he would always say, when a song would come up or music would come up, do you know who's on horn? Do you know who that, you remember that song? Who's this sound like? You know, that's the kind of thing, you know, Dad would take me to shows, festivals, sneak me into clubs. And then my mom was also a dance minor at IU. So she went to Hampton, was a great athlete coming up through high school, but there weren't a lot of outlets for women. But she was also a dance minor when she ended up going to IU eventually, and had a dance group called the Top 20 up in East Chicago, Indiana. And some amazing women came out of that program. Iris Rosa is one of them mm. that taught at IU for 40 years. Mm. Mom had this dance group where they were so creative. It was, yes, from the Alvin Ailey, the Katherine Dunham, the Martha Graham modern dance type. But the music that would come to that through that program and the creativity was great, which got me involved in theater, dance, and everything else.
I want to move into talking about music, mm-hmm. specifically jazz. It seems like you grew up immersed in music and culture, as you just mentioned. You have family connections to this mm-hmm. music, too. You told me that you're related to the famous trumpet player Bobby Bryant,
mm-hmm.
and your husband is related to the legendary Naptown jazz sax player James Spalding.
Yes.
Tell me about your family's connection to jazz and what got you interested in the music, it as a kid.
Yeah. Right. Well, when I was researching Indianapolis jazz artists, I came upon an album, Bobby Bryant's album, who's my cousin Pam Brown, her husband. He's no longer with us, though. And they were in L.A. I have a great deal of family in California, more family in California along the coast than anywhere really in the country right now. So we would go to California a lot, and my dad would go hang out with Bobby Bryant when he would play Broadway shows that were traveling, and he'd sit in sessions, I guess, with him. But when I was researching the album, I saw a Bobby Bryant album. I was like, oh, cool. And then I see James Spalding, and I knew that James Spalding was related to my husband. I actually saw James Spalding play at the Walker, I don't know how many years ago. So I just thought that was so odd. And what are the chances of that? So, yeah, it's weird how all those connections work.
You do a lot of community events mm-hmm. in your capacity as deputy mayor. The coolest thing I've ever seen you do is introduce Thundercat at the 2021 Indy Jazz Fest. I know you incorporate the legacy and history of Indianapolis jazz in a lot of the presentations you give mm-hmm. in the community. Tell me how you educate people about this culture in your role as deputy mayor, how you promote it and educate?
I think every time I go out, if I'm speaking somewhere, I'd throw in some quotes, some history, things that people may not know about. You know, I'm like obsessed with Noble Sissel. A lot of people know that. And I talk about him all the time and people are like, no, I've never heard of him. And it just breaks my heart. And I meant to bring a book with me.
I know. I wanted to ask you about that book.
Oh, I'm so mad I didn't bring it. Yeah. I'll send you a picture of it. It was a book that my mother found at Goodwill. And it was called Negroes in the Great War. And it was written in 1920. And so when I read it, I read something about Noble Sissel. But within the paragraph about Noble Sissel, remember, this was a book, I think Woodrow Wilson had commissioned this book, and then a black man wrote it. And in it, it says, Noble Sissel comes from Indianapolis, Indiana, that boasts of having the best talent anywhere in the country, in the dramatic world, the dramatic and creative world, anywhere in the country. And I'm like, who else are you talking about? If most people don't know who Noble Sissel is, well, who are the other people you're talking about in 1920? If this was written in 1920, you're talking about years before that. So the frustrating thing, and being in the role that I'm in now and learning something, I kid you not, every day about Indianapolis, specifically about the black community in Indianapolis and the history, the rich history from Chaney Lively, more than likely the first black person in the city of Indianapolis in the early 1800s, up until now, is just amazing. And so what inspires me is to be able to tell those stories when I have the opportunity, and but then also figure out what is it that needs to happen next, so that we're able to have a place to tell these stories. We have wonderful museums and wonderful places here to celebrate Indianapolis, but let's admit it, there's very few that talk about the richness of our music and the jazz music and just Indiana music in general to the black history from day one and now.
Mm-hmm. On that subject, you brought some classic Indianapolis jazz recordings to share with us. Mm-hmm. The first track we're going to listen to is Stan Getz and J.J. Johnson performing Billy's Bounce at the Opera House, recorded in 1957. J.J. Johnson is an international jazz icon. He's considered the paragon of jazz trombonists. Tell me about this track and why you selected this, and what does J.J. Johnson mean to you in Indianapolis?
One, I love Billy's Bounce. It's one of those standards. I got in an argument with my husband not too long ago, seriously, when I would tell him how many tracks I had of a certain song. He's like, that's impossible. I'm like, well, yeah, I can have 10 versions of Back Home Again in Indiana that's actually a jazz standard, too, by 10 different people, and it sounds completely different. And so that's what I like about this, too. One, I love Stan Getz. Mm-hmm. I love Stan Getz, you know, when he does the Brazilian.
The bossa nova. Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
The best. But This combination is awesome. It bounces.
Yeah. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. We just heard the great Indianapolis jazz trombonist J.J. Johnson performing Billy's Bounce with Stan Getz. That track was selected by my guest this week, Deputy Mayor Judith Thomas. And Judith, we're going to listen to another track you brought to share with us now. This is by the great Wes Montgomery. We're going to hear Stairway to the Stars off his album with Milt Jackson, Bags Meets Wes. This year is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Wes Montgomery. There's been a lot of programming in the city around that. Tell us about this piece and the significance of Wes Montgomery.
Well, I mean, again, just like J.J. Johnson, coming from Indianapolis and setting a standard for one particular instrument is amazing. And then we have someone else from Indianapolis that did the same thing with the electric guitar, Wes Montgomery. And yes, there were a lot of celebrations. I really had even bigger dreams for what we could have done. I just hate that I didn't start 3 years ago and there wasn't a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, you know, stopped with some of that. But the fact that he's with Milt Jackson, again, another just amazing trailblazer with a different instrument, Milt Jackson, who I actually got to see at the Walker once during a convention. One of the best concerts I've ever seen. The place was barely full. He was actually here, I think, for the Black Doctors. They held a convention back in the 90s here. Might have been late 80s. And again, tagged along with my father. And to think that, man, could you imagine if Wes had still have been around and that we could have experienced that combination. And then, of course, this great song, too.
Let's listen. This is Wes Montgomery and Milt Jackson with Stairway to the Stars. I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is Deputy Mayor Judith Thomas. We're listening to some tracks that you brought to share with us. Up next, we're going to hear a contemporary track by the great saxophonist Rob Dixon. This is off his 2018 album, Coast to Crossroads. It's a solo piece titled It Could Happen to You. Rob is a huge figure in Indianapolis. He's known as the musical mayor of the city. Tell me about the importance of Rob Dixon and why you picked this track.
You know, Rob's kind of like the Wynton Marsalis of jazz, but for Indianapolis and the region, really. You know, Wynton, I can't say that Wynton single-handedly kept jazz alive, traditional jazz alive in the country, but, well, I might as well say it. He kind of did in the early 80s, which is why I respect him and love him so much. But Rob's the same way. I mean, Rob keeps it going. He brings others together. He's got the 317 sound he's trying to push, and I'm trying to help him as much as I can because I think that we need to celebrate the 317 and who comes out of 317 now and how can we implement that in every way here in the city and celebrate it and even outside the city so that people realize what we've got going on here and we can brag a little bit more. But Rob is one of the hardest working people that I know. Again, one of the hardest people I know as well is the actual mayor of the city. And so I can certainly see this being very similar with the mayor, musical mayor, because it's the same. They're everywhere. You know, people have, they hear them, they listen to them. Hopefully they inspire. But that's exactly what Rob does. And he's a good friend of mine. And he is all about where we need to take it to the next level. And this is a beautiful song. For so many reasons.
Quick question. Does Mayor Joe Hogsett know about Rob's distinction as the musical mayor
yeah.
of Indianapolis?
He definitely does.
What are his thoughts on that?
He definitely does. He calls him that. Okay. I mean, I think we were at an event not too long ago. It might have been Art and Soul or another event where he actually referred to him. So, yes, he definitely knows that Rob is the musical mayor.
No rivalries there. Yeah.
Not at all.
This is Rob Dixon with It Could Happen to You. I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is Deputy Mayor Judith Thomas. We're listening to some tracks that you brought to share with us. And Judith, you talked about, as we wrap up here, you talked about you would like to see more done to promote the history and legacy of music, specifically jazz music in Indianapolis. Do you think the city does enough to promote that legacy?
Well, I think, you know, we have to dream big now. And I know I am. You know, if you want to hear the dreams now, I can't promise anything because I'm just a worker, right? I'm just here trying to gather everyone together and see how we can get some things done. But I'm imagining, you know, an African-American museum here that people can come and see all the different things going on, just not just individuals, but even stories of neighborhoods that don't exist anymore. I mean, you could spend hours learning about Norwood and just, you know, in visually reading stories, photos. Imagine that being somewhere that we can go and learn the history of the 28th Regiment, all these things. So same thing with music. It would be great to see an Indiana music, jazz music museum, right? To be able to, we're talking about these things, but being able to walk in and listen to these recordings, right? Seeing some concerts that existed, seeing people on the wall that maybe you didn't know anything about, people that were here, like, as we discussed before, you know, Pookie Johnson was my mailman. Yes, he was a mailman, but he also played saxophone and played with some other significant folks that played around the city. Jimmy Coe and all, as a young person, would go to different receptions and events with my parents. And, you know, these folks that had played with amazing artists for years and were amazing artists themselves. Where are we celebrating them right now? We've got to find a way to do better and to include everyone. And now that we have people sitting at the table that haven't been at the tables before, right? Where when they created certain museums, there were specific people that were there. But now we have other people with voices that can say, this is what we need from this city, and we need to tell everyone's history. And that's the beauty about the work that people like Rob Dixon's doing, like Gang Gang's doing, like Kelly at Be Nimble for Business and Black Businesses. We need more of that. They need to be heard, and we need to get things done to tell all stories.
I interview a lot of folks here every week who were from these historic Black communities. Many of them have a sense of bitterness or anger about how everything played out. Do you have any of that? It seems like you feel very optimistic that things can and will change. Do you have any sense of bitterness or anger about the injustices that happened here?
Being a Black person, period, can make you bitter about everything, not just your neighborhood, but everything. But I turn it into something else because I'm amazed at how people have come out of the things that we've been through, which just proves what an amazing culture we come from, which is why in the last part of my life, in my years, my goal is to make sure we're able to celebrate it in some way. And part of the job that I have of sitting and listening to people, you know, there's some folks I have monthly meetings with because I want to know what's going on in their neighborhoods, how I can help them, what's not working, what is working, and how we can celebrate them. That gets me excited. And I understand the bitterness. Believe me, I've got it every day. But I turn it into something else where I can actually help and make a difference and make changes. And that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, well said. The city is in the middle of a very contentious mayoral election race. Any final thoughts you want to share? Any future plans? I know it's hard to bank on the future for you right now, but any final thoughts, any future plans you want to share?
Boy, I tell you, the city's moving in such an amazing direction when you look at all the development, the investments that we've made into the parks. I'm telling you, that Frederick Douglass Park is going to be amazing. Broad Ripple already is. And looking at, you know, the violence reduction, the mental health focus that we have, in conversations we've never had in this city before. And yes, the pandemic and some of the racial reckoning have made us really look at this. And we made investments. We had people at the table that know what's happening out in the city and talk to people what's happening in the city. So we want to see that work continue. And it's important work. And it's where the city's moving. And that's in the right direction. And it's a collective effort. And as I said before, people that haven't been at the table are at the table now. And that's how we need to move.
Deputy Mayor Thomas, thank you for being here today. And sincerely, thank you for promoting the history and legacy of Indianapolis jazz. You do such an incredible job educating people on this. And I thank you. And I know all the musicians in the city appreciate it, too. Okay.
Well, thanks for having me here. And, you know, I'll continue to do what I can, that's for sure, because Indianapolis is a special place and we need to brag a little bit more.
Thank you. That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you to my guests, Zakir Hussain and Deputy Mayor of Indianapolis, Judith Thomas. Check out the Cultural Manifesto podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Cultural Manifesto is hosted and produced by me, Kyle Long. Thank you for listening.